and welcome to the newest episode of It Depends, a technical podcast by us here at Clear Function. My name is Ben Robin, and I'm here with David Mohundro.
How's it going?
Who we call Mo.
Hi.
Welcome, Mo. Daniel Pritchett.
Hey, Ben.
Welcome, Daniel. And Jesse Brown.
Hey.
Hey, Jesse. So, guys, today we really want to talk about the topic of coding, which is a large part of what we do as developers, and meetings, which is a surprisingly not small part of what we do as developers. I don't know how many non-developers we have listening, but some might be surprised to find that developers don't actually just write code 8 to 5 and then leave.
Whoa.
There's actually more to it than that. To do that, though.
Do you?
Yes.
Yeah, so that might come as a shock to some, but there are non-development things, non-coding things that developers do, even though it's all development. So we want to talk about how do you balance those things and still get the code written, the feature built, or the bug fixed, or whatever it is. So do you guys have general tips to know maybe like a ratio or proportion or number of hours of time you try to spend, let's say, coding per week?
Yeah, I don't think that there's like a golden ratio that I try to hit. You know, meetings generally are scheduled when they're needed. I don't try to, you know, here we're pretty good about scheduling meetings that, you know, only as you need them. And so I don't decline meetings just because, just to try to like push features through or anything. So I assume that if I'm invited that it is, that it's needed. And so I don't really try to like, you know, try to like carve out special time for development or for meetings in that matter. So.
That's a good question. Like, if you're at a bigger company and you find that people decline your meetings a lot, you might want to wonder what sort of miscommunication is happening.
I didn't have many meetings at all in my career until I was at an organization that, for one, was a little bit smaller, to be honest, but also did more to embrace agile processes. The more waterfall the process that I have worked in the past has been, the less meetings I've had.
Yeah, you just get a stack of papers dumped in your desk.
And like, yeah, I mean, it used to be in a binder, to be honest. Exactly. Yeah. So it was sort of jarring just the first. I remember getting into an agile process. I was like, man, we were just in a meeting yesterday. And it was more than just stand-up, you know.
Yeah.
We've talked about the agile project methodology before on the podcast and the idea that there are meetings intentionally built in, tightly scoped meetings with very small purposes, and they recur. So like a daily stand-up meeting, a two-week sprint meeting, and things like that. So we intentionally have more meetings than someone might expect.
Yeah, and so, yeah, that's the part I like least about the agile process are the built-in meetings. Specifically at other companies, you know, when you get 10 or 12 developers in a room to vote on the next 2 years worth of development, that's inevitably, in my opinion, going to change drastically in like the next 60 days.
Yes.
Like you vote for like 6 months worth of effort. And then a month from now, the business pivots for one reason or another. You know, maybe they swapped out CTOs or maybe they, you know, the project manager decided that they wanted to chase down this, you know, this other client who has different needs and like, now and then by the time you get back to the stories you voted, if you ever get back to the stories you voted, they no longer, the votes don't carry the same weight because like now the product has changed and things like that. And so now no one remembers anything. And, you know, and those meetings are not small. You know, when we talk about small meetings, a stand up, I guess, is considered a small meeting, right? 15 to 30 minutes, maybe. But those were some just huge meetings, like multi hour, like a whole day sometimes on just voting. You know, feature by feature. And so that, you know, those
They're
are the meetings. Those are the meetings that I try to avoid as much as possible.
And that isn't historically how we've done it here. I was referring more to sprint review, which are once every 2 weeks. Generally.
Yeah, I was mostly just arguing against the, I think you said something earlier, like Agile kind of has small predefined meetings, like in its, or Scrum does in its thing. Yeah. And I was like, that one is not a small meeting. And
I guess our iteration of Scrum does.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was hinting at. Saying I didn't quite follow you on what you described Agile as. To me, Agile is a series of principles, ideals. Communication's a big deal. I don't think meetings are in the Agile manifesto per se. Meetings are certainly a manifestation of communication, but not necessarily the entire team in a room making up numbers and drawing on a whiteboard.
Well, and certainly the idea that a story is a placeholder for a conversation is meeting intensive, can be. Informal meeting, right? Not like a formal, let's get all 10 people in the room, but like a informal, I approach you at your desk and let's figure out what we mean by this story.
Or you could have phone calls, or you could have a 3-person project team doing it all with Trello cards.
All still meetings.
Meeting. Yeah. What do you mean by meeting?
I mean communication. I mean, meeting presupposes a thing. Like, there's many ways for me to get from here to my house that don't involve a 4-wheeled combustion vehicle.
Yes, I agree.
What?
So I'm talking about 2 or more people communicating.
So am I.
Through any medium. That may not involve being co-located for
which I would say is a meeting, regardless of how far away you are.
Agreed.
Are emails meetings? Are forum comments meetings?
It does get a little blurry when you talk.
I guess email and like writing Trello cards are not meetings, but everything else you've listed has been a meeting, I think. Like, if you're talking to someone verbally, one way or the other, that's a meeting.
And that's
like, if they walk up to your desk,
if they
hit you up on Slack phone call, even I would say a Slack conversation, like a one-on-one direct message is a meeting. Like, just because it's not on a calendar and doesn't involve multiple people, like, I don't know. So we're getting into weird semantics here, but I don't know.
I would make 2 sets of distinctions that I think wipe out 90% of the issues we've just raised. Mm. One is formal and informal meeting, as I said earlier, something that's on the calendar versus I walk up to your desk.
Okay.
And physical versus digital meeting or virtual meeting. So Google Hangout versus in the conference room.
Synchronous communication.
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. So something else, I mean, just maybe a different thing together here is development, coding, whatever, versus communication. Like, you cannot work 100% in a silo on something without some form of communication.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that is in person, over the phone, asynchronous like an email or Slack
requests.
Can be,
right.
So through documentation, depending on how distributed your team is, if you have a team like that's in Europe and you're on the West Coast, you're probably embracing a lot more asynchronous communication. If you're all in the office, you know, take advantage of it. I would say one practice that I have found, I first heard this term from, I think it was a blog post by Scott Hanselman. It was know when to escalate your communication. So start with a low bar in terms of like maybe it's a chat or Slack message or something, and if it gets too detailed, then maybe you need to send an email because it's a paragraph or two.
I love that.
If the email is not working, know when to pick up the phone and call or walk over to their desk. One of the difficult parts with that, of course, is the more in person you get or the more voice focused you get, knowing how to gather the notes from that communication, you know, that is one thing that I've found is the more informal or, like if you just walk over to someone's desk and just ask them questions, if someone didn't write the notes for that, then you have a whole lot of situations where you're saying, hey, you remember talking about that thing yesterday or the day before? And like, yeah, what did we talk about? And I don't know. I just have this funny feeling like we said this. And anyway, it's just that's sort of a tangent, but those are the ways that I think about communication. And meetings are one of those. Sometimes you're sitting there talking to someone in person. You need to escalate to a meeting because you maybe don't have the stakeholders necessary or the subject matter expert necessary.
Makers.
It's like, get something on the calendar. We've got to talk about this.
That's particularly a big deal for consulting. Like, I've been consulting for a while, and I remember when I was newer to it that realizing that sometimes it really would be better to just pick up the phone and talk for 10 minutes and 20 emails wouldn't solve this problem.
Yeah.
And I've had problems where I just need to go on site with the client.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it's across town and not another hemisphere, but sometimes that's the only thing that'll do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also especially important in consulting to know who to reach out to. Like a lot of times, you know, these consulting, you know, the people who come and get consultants, it'll be a small group of people who are like stakeholders who may not be like the tech decision makers or like getting those contacts up front. So, you know, who to talk to kind of about what range of issues and making sure that, you know, you yeah, you just know how to communicate when you're stuck on a problem or when you need a decision made. You know mm-hmm. who's the best to go after, and like you said, make that phone call, make that email.
Right.
That's a big part of that. I think there is good communication.
I think we've all sort of said that there is a little bit of pain involved with at least some meetings, but I do think that you know one of the agile principles is people versus process.
Mm-hmm. And people over process.
Yeah, people over process. Right. Yeah, and it's just the communication is a part of valuing people over process. You know, sometimes a meeting is valuing people. Mm. It feels a little bit like process.
Yeah. Well,
it depends on if it's like a constant depends, right? Thing.
Yeah. What if you have a 100-person meeting and one person does all the talking and 99 of them are asleep? That might be valuing process over people.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know that you could give a specific like formula to know when something is bad or not. But I mean, mm-hmm. I do think there are things you can do to make a meeting more valuable, though. For example, like, if you don't have, if it's a lecture style thing where it's like, maybe that is the best way to get everyone involved, but maybe you could also just record a video and have everyone watch it whenever they have some free time or something.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's will the they style really watch where it's it? Like,
no.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been a part of a company that was large enough to have like all hands meetings occasionally. Right. And those are the worst. Like, like
they're painful.
In my experience, there was almost nothing of value to people who are like just kind of general employees. Like it's mostly for like director level and above, like kind of hearing the, I guess what happened, like how were profits and I don't know, all this stuff. They just talk about all kinds of stuff. And like you said, most people are asleep, but you can't actually like work while you do it. Like it's all hands. Everyone has to be in some conference room. They gather 30 people from every regional office and you all have to sit across from a speakerphone while people learn how to mute it.
I know which one meetings you're talking about.
You know? And so, those meetings, I if you're not sure if the meeting should be done, one of the things you could do is figure out how much did it cost?
Yeah.
How much, because if you just take the hourly rate of like all the people that you invited to that meeting, mm-hmm. like just kind of do the math in your head. Like, is it really worth taking up, 40 hours of like billable time for this meeting or whatever, however many people you have in the meeting? I mean, that's. Yeah, anyway, that's one thing that you can do to kind of just make sure you're not having frivolous meetings, because it's really easy to think that, me talking to everyone and making sure this is said the right way makes sense. But, sometimes an email is better if it doesn't cost anyone 30 minutes.
So you've mentioned a dial that we could turn up or down, mm-hmm. which is the cost on the meeting. Mm. So either number of people we have in it or time, like how long the meeting is.
Exactly.
Is that the only dial? So what I mean by that is it true that we should keep the meeting as short and with as few people as possible always?
That's another one of the
ding.
Yeah, it depends. In terms of...
So the answer is no. I asked a binary, is it true that we should do this? And you said, well, no, there are times when we shouldn't. Why?
Not always. Yeah.
I'd say the shortest, smallest meeting possible is a good ideal. Not that any meeting is ever just going to be two people for 5 minutes, but that...
Why would you break the ideal? This reveals the second
for
dial.
For a good reason. You have to be thoughtful and deliberate.
Give me one example.
Why?
Deadlines. Yeah. Deadlines. Like if you've got a client who needs something by a certain date, then one-hour meeting today may not do it, and you may need to extend it to 2 hours because that's what you know it'll take to get the result so that you can deliver it in time, mm-hmm. right?
Something else, too, is reading lots of material, like documentation, can sometimes take more time than sitting down and going through a whiteboard session or something.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we've had cases where someone gets pulled onto a project and you could read over all of the docs for the specs, or you could go through a fairly short whiteboarding session where it's interactive, mm-hmm. Q&A style.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
You cannot interrogate documentation.
Yeah. There are different types of, formal or informal meetings or communication that can be very much beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, even long ones.
Yeah. They don't have to be the formal, like, okay, here's the agenda. Although it's good to have, I would say the more formal the meeting, the more focus needs to be spent on agenda. Maybe another thing is the more people you have, mm-hmm. like to Jesse's point, the cost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you don't want to have 20 people in a meeting and you sit down and someone says, what are we meeting for?
Yeah, that's, yeah. That's a bad sign when a meeting starts that way, right? Like, unless who's it's leading someone
especially if anyone involved just got has from anxiety. Like, like, I need you all in the boardroom today at 1. People are going to be like, oh, God, I'm going to die.
Well, yeah. And I guess the content, how broad the content is as well. So I'm thinking of a recent project retrospective we did. We realized, gee, there's a lot we could talk about. This was a long project, and we want to talk about what we did well and what we could do better to learn for next time. Well, we can't do all that in 45 minutes. Yeah. So we really have to prioritize what is the best use of this time.
Yeah.
And that requires thought ahead of time.
Giving ourselves 45 minutes probably worked out better than giving ourselves 4 hours.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
And I'm going to go back on that and say that Daniel is right in that the shortest meeting you can have is always the right answer. Like, I think that, like, because the way to phrase it that way, right? Yeah. Like, you can't always say, I'm going to have 5-minute meetings, but, like, given, like, the scope of what you're doing, like, if tomorrow by 8 a.m. you have to have something and there's 2 hours left in the day and you think it's going to take 2 hours to do it, then by definition, that's the shortest meeting you can have. But don't just add an extra 30 minutes of padding just because you think it might extend. You should try to scope it to as tightly as you can with the content that you know.
Another way to put that would be if you have an hour scheduled and you finish in 30 minutes, it's okay to leave the meeting.
Yeah in the meeting. Yeah.
Yeah, that goes back to the design ideal that cleaning or designing something is done when you're finished adding everything you need, but taking away everything you can. Like, you just have it pared down to the essence and you move on. Maybe you need to have a follow-up meeting every third time, but mostly you're just glad to be done.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. How do you know when a meeting is over?
Agenda.
When the goal has been met.
Yes. And how do you form the goal of the meeting? And
whoever
calls
the meeting should definitely have a goal in mind before they call the meeting.
Agreed. How do you communicate that? Is that an invite? Is that the first thing you talk about in the meeting? Is it both? Is it other?
I do think that meeting titles should, you know, accurately, you know, have an idea of what you're supposed to be doing. You know, don't just be like, you know, conference room meeting, right? Like,
that's a good idea.
You know, it should be like, you know, we're here to discuss this client's project or whatever, you know, and like, you know, the architecture behind it. So you can kind of go in like, okay, because what a lot of people forget is that when people come to a meeting, a lot of times they need to kind of be prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people aren't just walking into a conference room and being like, all right, what are we doing? Like, if you put something in a meeting invite, like, to me, that should indicate that for all the attendees who are going to be there, they should know what we're talking about. And if they don't, they have some legwork to do before that meeting.
Right.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean that, you know, if you schedule a 30-minute meeting, you've probably taken 45 minutes to an hour of everyone's time.
Yeah.
In likelihood. Because if you're going to go talk about architecture, like, you've already, you know, if I'm not familiar with that company or that product or what they're currently doing, like, I've got to do a little bit of legwork to figure out, okay, who are we talking about? What are their problems?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that could be an hour's worth of work before that meeting. Even.
Yeah.
Whenever I was in a role in the past where I was scheduling more meetings, so people were looking at me like, what is this meeting for? I would spend sometimes half hour to an hour of prep time, sometimes more if it warranted it, but it was all for the purpose of the 8 people that were also going to be in the meeting, making sure that I didn't take up too much of their time.
Yes.
It's, you know, an hour of my time so that I don't have 8 hours of their time.
Yeah. I think at the beginning, Jesse was kind of hinting that developing with all of his work hours was an ideal, but he never expected to hit it. And I think that's sort of along the same theme here is, we expect to have meetings and we think they're useful, but when you get 40 hours a week of meetings and 0 of coding, you've probably gone too far, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
I have found, like, another thing. If you're sending out a meeting invite, it's okay to include people who may not be there, but you can mark their attendance as optional.
Good call.
So it's more of a, hey, you're welcome to come if you want to.
Counterpoint, how many optional attendees have you actually accepted? Like, if I'm optional, I almost always just say no.
Depending on which calendaring app I use, sometimes I'll respond as maybe.
Yeah.
I think it's on my calendar. It's like, if someone needs to come and pull me in for something, it's like, hey, we might need you.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll block the time off, but I won't come in unless someone, you know, hey, we're going to need you for the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, the option can be different. Like, if it was, we know you care about this, even though you're not technically required to achieve the goal state, I might like to know.
Yeah, because of that prep time I was talking about, if I'm not required on there, I almost always hit no. So if they're like, oh, you know, I really did kind of want you there, then they change it to required, and then I know that I need to do the work before the meeting. Because I don't even, you know, I don't know. I don't, you know, because some people will do optional, and then they change their mind. They're like, oh, wait, I really wanted you to be there. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, you know, mark me as required.
Ways. Yeah. So something that we haven't talked about a lot, but it's just remote meetings. Those are, you have any thoughts?
Those are hard.
They are difficult.
They're particularly hard when you have a quorum in one room. And if you satellite members.
Yes.
We had one of those earlier this week where I was the one dial-in, and it was awkward on both sides.
I will mention that I think in the last month, I've been in both, where it was almost half and half, and where I was the only one on the remote side. And it is dramatically different.
Oh, yeah.
When it was half and half, I remember that, I think it was earlier this week, it seemed like it worked great.
If more than half the team is also remote, then it seems to work out better. When you have most of the people on the other side that are, there are things that you can do to make it better.
Yeah. Well, and I think
it's still
there's
really
even,
hard.
It
can still it's really still be like, though.
You know, especially depending on the range of individuals that you have. Like if you've got a bunch of developers, like they're more than likely going to be fairly comfortable with their own computer setup and things like that. But as soon as you involve like, you know, people who are maybe in sales who don't, like, or aren't maybe always on their computer. They're usually like, you know, so then like they're late to get the, you know, they have to install Zoom or GoToMeeting or Skype or, you know, and this happens even in like professional companies. Like we have calls with like huge vendors, like, you know, and people will come on a lot later than they would if it was like a physical meeting. Like they'll be like, oh, sorry, I'm late. It's like 8 minutes late and they're just rolling up and their microphone's got feedback that you can't understand a word they're saying. The hardware makes a huge difference as well. Like at home, I like to use a headset. Yeah, if they can even get their microphone to work.
Yeah.
You know, oh man, remote meetings are super hard. I don't know when we're going to solve this as like a, you know, as an industry. And like that, I know people keep trying. I mean, every year I'm installing like three new versions of like, you know, conference software, but they all sort of have the same problems where the videos like, you know, slideshows or it takes up too much bandwidth and suddenly they're like breaking up all the time.
I do think there's a chasm of difference between one person being remote in an otherwise physical meeting and even just two people.
Yeah.
Right. Like it just feels totally different. It's still not great, but
being the one person is rough.
Yeah, being the one person is really hard.
Like you said, Scott Hanselman have blogged about it before because he's been remote for Microsoft for like a decade now or something, right? Or close to it.
But and they also have like the, is it the 360 degree
he's got
cameras?
The robot. He's got tried a robot multiple presence. Robots over the years and stuff like that. And like, you know, he's been a workhorse for trying to make like remote people not feel like an outsider there. And you kind of have to do that, especially if you're the outsider. Like you've got to put in extra effort to make sure that you're there on time. Your microphone's good. There's no feedback. Yes. You know how to mute and unmute yourself if there is feedback.
Right.
Like, you know, you've got to know it. Yeah, I think if you're remote and you're going to be the one person who's remote and the rest of you aren't, like you've got to know to put in that effort. And, and that means maybe sending them a camera. Like if they usually do meetings without a camera, like get the company to buy a camera and put it in the conference room and be like, hey guys, if you could just like plug this up every time, like this would make everyone's life easier.
I do want to throw in something there too, is not in person, but face-to-face, like video calls are so much better than just voice.
Yes.
Yeah. Just in terms of, it's not always a rule, but there is so much of communication that is nonverbal that you just, you hear something and it's like, uh-oh, was that a joke? Mm-hmm. Were they being sarcastic? You just don't know. And then you start to assume things and it's you're already, especially if you're the one remote person.
It makes me want to strap heart rate meters on everybody so you can see his part behind him, who's having feelings during the
having feelings.
So I used to work remotely for a while, and I could definitely agree with you about the technology aspect. There were a couple of times where I made overnight impulsive outlays when I realized I was falling behind with the regular video chats or whatever. Like I remember I had to double my cell phone bill because I very regularly needed to tether because I'd be having meetings in different places. I was on an important, like, multi-hour status call, and I think the second time I heard somebody tell me they couldn't hear me on my crappy $15 earpod things, I went and bought a sweet Bluetooth microphone, and the problem went away immediately. I know one of our favorite remote buddies from a past project had a studio microphone in his home office.
And yeah. he was clear as a bell every time. You know, he had been working remote for years, and so you know, like he'd already worked through a lot of these issues, and maybe he has it for other reasons. Maybe he records the podcast. I don't know, but just you know, if you could record yourself over one of these services and then listen to yourself, you know, that would probably help out a lot. You know, just to make sure that you know people can hear you and understand you clearly.
Right.
Otherwise, they're just going to ignore you, which makes it problematic.
That gets really hard, especially if you're the one person remote again. Sometimes the people in the room get excited and they start talking all over each other, and then you just can't get a word edgewise. You can't hear because of the crosstalk.
We've said multiple times, I can remember at least two times specifically, where we've said, hey, it's really helpful for the people who aren't in the room if no one talks over each other. Because on certain microphones, you just cannot understand what's being said if two people are talking.
And I think that's, you said there's a big difference between being the only one remote and more people being remote, is because when you are remote, you're more conscious of that. Because as you talk over, you almost certainly can't hear anyone else just because of the way the technology usually works. But in a room, it's, you know, there's a lot of little conversations going on, and those just kind of naturally happen because people are positioned next to someone else who says something. And so when you're all remote, you don't really have that problem. And so that just kind of goes away.
Another thing we talked about, different people have it. Well, I guess we didn't, but we talked about different styles of communication, like when an email is go to a phone call. Different people are a lot better at broadcasting or receiving different types of communications. Like personally, I'm hard of hearing, and I don't at all question that face-to-face meetings have a lot of bandwidth. You've got more information, and it's good for the feelings of bonding with people. But I do pretty well with online communication, like Slack and email and whatnot. Possibly better than other people, because I have, you know, coping mechanisms around not being the very best at hearing in a mixed loud environment. Like when the crosstalk starts, even in person, I tend to have trouble keeping up, which leads to me kind of checking out, not necessarily consciously, but
you are really good at emoji, which makes you know, using Slack and things like that much better.
thank you.
All right, so we've established that meetings are a necessary part of what we do, a very important part of what we do. And just to kind of re-summarize something Daniel said earlier, if we were to go a week where we spent 40 hours in a meeting, that would not be okay. That would be very odd and probably unhelpful and quite possibly negative. So how do we actually practically balance the amount of time we spend in meetings versus the amount of time we don't? Mo?
Something that I would suggest is try to, if you're going to have a meeting, especially a regularly scheduled one, keep it at the same time of day so that you can sort of mentally, like stand-ups, for example, try to keep them early in the day. Or if the team agrees to put it at the end of the day, that's fine. But just in terms of, we've talked about flow before, but so that you can not get your flow interrupted, you can stay in the zone, you can, you know, keep your mind focused and really be productive on a non-communicative task. Although you could argue programming is communication. But anyways,
if you've got meetings sprinkled all throughout the day, you're almost certainly not going to get coding done, even if you only have 4 hours of meeting in an 8-hour day.
So for stand-up again, like we do ours pretty early in the morning. So I don't come in and think, I'm going to get started on this thing right away. I can sort of mentally start thinking about it. I can sort of catch up and take some notes, partially so that I can, whenever I tell the team what I'm working on, or if I have questions I'm going to be asking in stand-up with the rest of the team in person, so that I can respect their time, then I'll have all those things. And then once I get out, hopefully I can get to work.
Daniel, what do you think?
Mo stole my idea. Seriously, I was going to say, like maker schedule, manager schedule idea. If you're going to have meetings that involve developers, try to have them at the beginning of the day, the end of the day, or right around lunch, assuming you expect them or hope that they will be out creating things for most of the day. Just do your best to recognize that the more consecutive hours they have to do that, the better, and plan your meetings with creative staff around that.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why this meeting to record a podcast is on Friday afternoons, and there's a meeting on either side of it today. So, Jesse, what do you think?
I'd say coming prepared to meetings.
Yes.
You know, don't just be the guy who shows up and doesn't know what's going on just because your calendar, your phone beeped at you. You know, just be, you know, be ready for the meeting. Know what you should be able to infer what other people are going to expect from you. And if you don't, know that, then figure out before the meeting, not during the meeting. So respect everybody else's time. It goes back to that point, like you were saying, Daniel, like respecting everyone's time. And I think Mo said it as well during like stand-ups and stuff, like being prepared for the meeting makes the meeting shorter, which means you get to the point quicker and we can all get back to producing, you know.
Well, one final thing I would also just throw in there too is when I was, again, in that role of having to schedule meetings more often, I was the one putting them on the calendar.
Mm-hmm.
I also was in more meetings than I necessarily always had time for. So I would block my calendar up to make sure that I didn't have another meeting fall on that. And that was just time for me.
Yeah.
And so if you ever find yourself being overwhelmed by too much and you like the 40 hour, you know, hypothetical there, like maybe you need to block off 2 hours or something to get something done.
Yep.
It's okay. You're basically saying with your calendar, assuming you're using some sort of calendaring system, I've got these 2 hours blocked. Mm-hmm. So it's, and it's communicating to your team in a different format to say, I've got to have this time. So
yeah, it's kind of like putting a do not disturb on your door, right? Yeah. Like no one's going to walk in because you got do not disturb on. So use your calendar like a door, right? Because otherwise people just use your time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so
I will use this opportunity to mention that if you have multiple calendars, and I know this is something you've worked with before as well, Daniel, which I do. I have a personal calendar and a work calendar.
Right.
Well, sometimes, you know, like a lunch meeting, for example, I'll have on my personal and not my work. And maybe there's a meeting that needs to happen from 11 to 12 or something like that at work. Right. And I didn't put my personal lunch meeting on the work calendar. Well, it's really helpful to sync those up so people know when you're going to be busy doing something that you just can't change.
Yeah, I kind of wish you could actually like put a single item on two calendars.
Yeah,
like that'd be great. In the calendar apps, like you know, one is anonymous and one is, you know, for home stuff. Like.
Right. So the closest I've found, at least if they're both Google calendars, is I'll put something in my personal calendar, invite my work email account to it, then log into work email, accept it, and mark it as private but busy, so people know that I'm definitely out for this hour, and so they're not going to schedule me, but they don't necessarily know why I'm leaving the office for 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's closer. Right. Well, part of balancing our time that we spend in meetings and not in meetings is when we're in the meeting, doing it well. So what are some practical tips that you guys have done or can think of that help us to do meetings well? Daniel?
Lately, I'd say keep an eye on the goal of the meeting. Like figure out these are the three things that need to be done before the meeting's over. This one's been done so far. I hope we're working on number two. If not, let's get back on it. I'm not saying that meetings have to be not fun or not social, but there's definitely a balance where you don't want to just get too far off the rails and have too much fun in every meeting to where you have 15 minutes turning to hour-long meetings and then people are wondering, you know, when is the work going to happen?
Yeah, as an invitee to a meeting, you're saying, I want to know what I'm coming to this meeting for and when I'm done with the meeting.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
And if you don't know, then you're not even sure if you should be there, right?
How can you contribute to the goal?
Yeah. Yeah.
Jesse?
Yeah, I think if you're running a meeting, you know, be there before the meeting time and have your laptop and everything already connected to the screen. If you've got stuff to show, you know, no one wants to sit there and watch you open up browser tabs and forget your login and reset passwords and all that to doing whatever you need to do. And the same goes true if you think you might be presenting. If you're at a meeting, you know, even if you're not running the meeting, but you're an attendee and you think there's a good chance that someone's going to share your screen or that you might need to show someone something, you know, just kind of goes back to being prepared, and that means technically too, like having everything hooked up and, you know, cameras on for remote people, you know, all that stuff, you know, just it just shows everyone that you're ready to do what you came there to do. Yeah.
And that you value their time.
Yeah,
I feel like that makes me think of, in particular, like in a sprint review type of setting, if I know I'm going to demo something, maybe have done it before or have the test data set up so that I know it's going to work the way I expect it to during the actual demo, especially if it's to a business user or something like that. But also if it's to other developers, we don't really want to waste anyone's time. So
yeah, I've seen people just like, they're like, oh, I'm supposed to show that today. And then they have to like open up Visual Studio and like build the solution. You're like, oh man, like we had to sit here and like wait for people. Oh.
Yeah.
Another thing that you said made me think of another tip as well. So if the meeting invite that I get doesn't have a clear title or maybe a description, if I feel like it's necessary, maybe I could just reply to the meeting and say, hey, I'm happy to come to this, but can you help me understand what it's for so I can prepare?
Yeah.
That might help everybody help each other.
Or just decline it, and then they'll come talk to you anyway.
Well, but you could be positive and say, I'm assuming good intent in the scheduling of this meeting, and I'd love to do my best when I show up prepared for this vague meeting, you know?
If they're sitting next to you, can you just decline them so they don't, so they can look at you funny. But so, yeah, you should be nice.
I really like what Jesse said about when you are the person hosting a meeting. There's a much heavier responsibility. You are the one, and I think Mo mentioned this earlier, you're the one who's asking so much of all these people to be in the same place. You do need to be better prepared, earlier, ready to go the second it starts.
And maybe even wrangling people who are late. Maybe.
Yeah, try not to be late. That's a good tip. Like, even if you're not the one who's doing it, like, no one wants that. Nothing's more annoying than, like, a guy who's just, like, hanging out at the kitchen, just, you know, 5 minutes past meeting time. You're like, get in here. Like, yeah. Come on. Like, we have other stuff to do, right?
Yeah, if you're in the gym before stand-up, you got to finish your last rep early.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd say culturally, don't get in the habit of waiting for people who aren't on time to meetings. It's just a downward spiral. Have your meeting. Yeah. They can catch the notes or ask you what happened when they get here.
Yeah, I would even go so far as if they ask what happened when they got here, you'll be like, you can catch the meeting notes afterwards.
Oh.
Like, you know, just to reiterate, like, yeah, why they should have been on time, right? Like, because if it's really important to them, then they should be there on time, unless there's a really good reason, right? And that happens.
Yeah, so. And it's not that everyone's not going to have occasional accidents, yeah, or exactly, interruptions, but don't expect the whole company to wait around for you.
Yeah, don't backtrack unless it's absolutely necessary, right? Yeah. Like, if they can catch up on it with a five-minute conversation afterward, respect everyone else's time who was already there, you know, regardless of whether it was a good reason or not, and continue on with the meeting as long as it's not like the one piece of critical information to understand the rest of the meeting, right?
Yeah.
It's helpful in those cases when you have a nice, healthy burn culture at work, because then it's just kind of like a friendly reminder zing instead of like a shaming zing.
Yeah.
The first time. Second time. But then the third time, you're like, you should be ashamed.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's super helpful for me and hopefully for those who are listening, just thinking about how to balance our time in meetings and our time writing code as developers. If you're listening and you would like to connect with any of us, you can find our information at podcast.clearfunction.com. You can follow each of us individually on Twitter, and you'll find links there to do that. Or you can follow us, the company, on Twitter at @clearfunction, and you can tweet at us, #itdepends. We will see you next time. Thanks, guys.
Extreme.
You've been listening to It Depends, a podcast by Clear Function. Clear Function is a group of happy engineers based in Memphis, Tennessee. We partner with visionaries to bring their ideas to life. For more information, check out our website at clearfunction.com.